Welcome back to another episode of Titans of Now. Titans is a showcase of ServiceNow personalities that have punched above their weight and elevated the ServiceNow community. Titans of Now is brought to you by me, Robert the Duke Fedoric. If you want to see what I'm up to, check out my website, theduke.digital. Here you'll find all my CJ and the Duke episodes, links to my YouTube content, and my upcoming course, Hired, the Definitive Guide to Profiles That Win ServiceNow Jobs. Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of Titans of ServiceNow, our first episode of 2022. I'm super excited about today's guest because he is an expert in topics that are extremely timely and important. He is a ServiceNow developer par excellence. He is an expert in the ServiceNow GRC app, and he is interested in the compliance and privacy spaces in general. He is a member of ServiceNow's 2021 Dev MVP cohort and host of the Phil Goes Deep YouTube channel. Links are in the description below. Ladies and gentlemen, I am so honored to introduce Phil Deep Swan.
Thank you so much. It's an honor to be here. It's an honor to be invited onto this show. So thank you so much.
Pleasure is mine. We are experimenting with a brand new format this time around. We're trying to actually capture the video. So if you see me staring off screen while I'm asking questions, old habits die hard.
No problem. We'll see how it goes.
So we always start at the start. How did you get your start in the ServiceNow ecosystem, Phil?
Sure. So 2014, I took a role in change management for a hospitality company. And, you know, they were managing 800 hotels, 400 restaurants, and a few thousand coffee shops. So you can imagine my disbelief when they showed me the process, which was to take change requests from a Lotus Notes mailbox, open up that email, take the RFC, Word document attached, and then copy and paste all the information into ServiceNow. And, you know, something didn't really feel right there. And it didn't look right either, because the latest version at that time was Fuji, but they were on Calgary. So I started asking questions, and it just seemed to be the answers I was getting back was surrounded by some fear. You know, there was fear of the unknown. There was no ownership of this platform. There was a fear of upgrading it. There was a fear of making any changes to it. So, you know, I kind of became poacher and gamekeeper there. I started attending ServiceNow user groups, Snugs, Now forums, and getting involved on the community. And really for myself, I started to build some confidence in knowing what was going on with the platform, that I was able to actually influence some changes there. So I was building confidence in myself and also in the organization. So started working as an interface with a partner at the time, and went from that kind of Lotus Notes group mailbox entry point to building a self-service portal on CMS, and did some integration with BMC Discovery tool, moved that into the CMDB, and made change management actually work almost like it was intended to. So yeah, that was for me the place where I found that ServiceNow was going to be my home for a while in terms of my career. You know, there's a career here, and this tool is really powerful if you get the most out of it, if you invest in it.
That's super interesting. So you were on the change management process side of the house?
Yeah, yeah.
Wow. Well, see, that just goes to show you, like, everybody talks about how do I get into ServiceNow. Like, there's so many unconventional ways to get into it. And I keep saying a lot of the more interesting stories that you hear and a lot of the more interesting resources that you can talk to are people who took it a completely unconventional route in.
Yeah, and you can imagine like running the cab each week and having to present your own changes to that cab. So like that's why I was kind of saying poacher versus gamekeeper. Mm-hmm. But we really built confidence there because I set up a standard change and a weekly release maintenance window. So we were pushing through agile kind of incremental improvements each week. But that confidence level really increased. It started off as this scary thing, like don't touch it, don't right. change it. And then it was actually, you know, we were doing internal community as well. So trying to get the wider parts of the business involved and starting to leverage that as well.
So everybody kind of falls in love with ServiceNow in their own way. So it's clear you fell in love with it because you sidestepped from change management into being the groundskeeper for ServiceNow. Can you describe the aha moment where you said, oh man, this is going to change everything?
I think the aha moment for me was was when, you know, my background before that. So I was in change management and looking at infrastructure and kind of ITIL processes. But my background was actually in software development. So I started in mainframe, database, queries, SQL, Unix scripts. My first program was actually written in assembler, but I was learning HTML, CSS and JavaScript. And I remember working with the partner that was very helpful. I'll actually shout out Noel, shout out Swapnil, because those guys really helped me learn and showed me that it was possible to learn ServiceNow at that time. But I remember cracking open like a business rule or something and being like, oh, it's just JavaScript. Oh, I know JavaScript. You know, it might have been a few years, but I was like, hello, old friend. So that for me was like, ah, that's how it works. But it was server side rather than what I'd learned was kind of client side JavaScript. So, yeah, that was like, oh, I know this stuff. I can do something here.
I don't want to put you in a bad place because I know the partner you work for has a very specific ServiceNow niche. But what part of the platform do you like working on most?
Sure. Well, you know, it would be too obvious for me to say GRC, for example, but obviously that's where I found my home, I think. But in terms of platform features, there's two things. Both of them were really released in Quebec and UI Builder. You know, I don't know what we call, I'm going to call it UI 17. I'm going to go out on a limb and just call it UI 17. I know that's not right. And I know that people won't agree with me, but I've now experienced, next experience. UI Builder as a piece of functionality that enables anybody with the right skills, the right access to actually make ServiceNow make sense. You know, that look and feel, we've been stuck on this kind of form and list UI user interface for so long.
Mm-hmm.
UI Builder really starts to bring together all of those related elements of a process, of a workflow. So being able to present meaningful information and even build those components as well.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like UI Builder and the new UI stuff is really groundbreaking, and I find myself keep coming back to that and trying to get comfortable there. And the other thing I want to mention is instant scan, because I think that that's another thing that really can add value at all different levels within a process, whether it be the development cycle or even looking at best practice for a particular process.
We definitely got to go off the beaten path and talk about both of those.
Okay.
So particularly UI Builder. So I've been watching this kind of manifest for a while now. And like, I've always been coming at things from the reporting side, and it always felt so arbitrary, so artificial that, oh, I go to the dashboard and that shows me numbers and graphs and kind of information that I need. But then I have to go to a form to do stuff with the stuff.
Yeah.
And I've always kind of, it's always felt arbitrary. Lists are different than forms or different than dashboards. Half the time we're putting lists on our dashboards. It's like, why can't these things all just be one experience? Is that what you think that they're going for with this new thing?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I don't know if you've ever tried to embed a report onto a form.
Way back in 1912. Yep.
Yeah, so like trying to embed charts and trying to present meaningful information. I mean, PA brought something out recently that was like embedded analytics or something, so that form, but you can see meaningful related information. You know, that was another try. And then, like you say, the other way around, building a dashboard and trying to drive some of your process from the dashboard, right? I always think that reports are going to support the process. So I want to know how many records I've got in each given state and where to focus my attention. But like you say, once you click that element of the chart, you go to the list and then you're back in the form. And then you lose that context. For me, UI Builder is very much about solving some of that context switching.
Mm-hmm.
It's also about, you know, in the world of GRC, the data model is so vast, and the complexity of some of the data that we're dealing with is so many clicks away that you can get lost. You can forget where you came from. And that breadcrumb in the UI Builder, in the Now experience as well, like finding your way back home, being able to relate the information that I'm looking at right now to some of the wider context and build those experiences in a meaningful way for the organization. I think that that's going to really help drive adoption. especially for in my space, like in GRC world, the customers and privacy as well, the customers that we're dealing with are not IT people. So you're having different conversations with them. So trying to get them to think about their world in terms of a process is always a challenge anyway, but then trying to get them to understand the form and the list, you know, related lists, form sections, menu on the left, trying to understand that user interface is part of the reason that it's quite difficult to get people really fully bought into the power of ServiceNow, I think. Yeah. So for me, the Now experience is really going to help drive adoption.
So the thing I worry about Now experience is how accessible is it? You know what I mean? Like, yeah, we talked about forms and lists and dashboards kind of being like the three things we had to work with before. And while we feel like the distinction between those is arbitrary, they're also primitive, which also means they scale very well, right? We could take literally anybody and teach them how to modify forms and lists and to some extent dashboards, but it's still relatively like a low learning curve. What about this Now experience, or are they calling it Next experience now? Or I'm never quite sure, but how accessible is that? Like, are we going to have to ramp up a huge like tech discipline before the rest of the market can consume this?
Yeah, I mean, it's like I say, it came out in Quebec, which is pretty much a year ago now, right? When UI Builder first launched in Quebec, and Rome came out and some real significant changes were made to the back end of the UI Builder capability. Now, I don't know all of the technical stuff here, so excuse my ignorance in a lot of ways. Yes, we are going to have to learn this new world, right? And the power and the potential is yet to be realized there. So, you know, I'm playing around in the background with like building a custom component, and I'm following a lab, and I'm like, okay, now I get it. That's doing that, mm-hmm. right? But I feel that what I'm learning there has got so much more longevity than trying to learn Jelly, for example.
Oh, God.
Right? So yeah. What are our options? Do we learn something that's very much aligned to industry? Mm-hmm. Okay, it's not industry standard, right? The web component stuff that's been implemented into ServiceNow, you know, speak to the likes of Travis and so on about why those things are different in terms of virtual DOM and, you know, all these things that I'm not really that au fait with. But yeah, we need to, there's a huge amount of enablement, and Brad and the team have done an amazing job at getting the dev site, sharing that information, sharing that knowledge, and the product team in the background are really listening to the feedback. And I think it's going to get easier. I think it's going to get better. The amount of components that are coming now out of the box is really going to enable the kind of low-code scenario. But UI Builder isn't quite low-code yet. You still need to write some JSON. You still need to connect things, which maybe is not going to be that intuitive for an end user today. Mm-hmm. But I think this is just part of the journey, and the UI Builder in the future, I think, will really be easily adopted by a wider audience. Right now it's at a bit of a weird place, I think.
Are you going to do some Phil Goes Deep episodes on it?
You know what, I was doing some. I was trying to dig in. I think one of the more popular episodes that I did was like, how hard can it UI be? You know, and you know, I've had Brad on. Thanks, Brad, for coming on. I've tried to drill into it, but in no way have I explored it to the level that like Ashley has done, and she's written blogs.
Yeah.
And she's really helped me learn. So I'm still far behind the curve, I feel, but maybe still far ahead of some people that haven't even tried yet.
Well, that's what I'm afraid of, really. Like, yeah. I mean, I'm going to be super frank about it, right? We got dev MVPs, and in the entire dev MVP program, we got Ashley, who's blazing the trails. We've got to get her on an episode too. And like the dev MVP program is kind of like trying to keep up with Ashley, but there's thousands and thousands and thousands of ServiceNow resources. And how fast can we move that whole population upwards? You know what I mean?
There was also the ninjas. We've got to shout out the ninjas.
Oh, the ninjas, yes.
Great. They had to change the name. I can't remember what it was from too, but then whoever was involved in that project of sharing that information,
yes,
was also really helpful to enable people in the community. I think the one thing we can do from, you know, even though I'm probably never going to be an expert in that stuff, is to promote it and to socialize it and talk about it in a way. You know, I talk with customers and, you know, they're saying, oh, I want to change the form because of X. And I'm saying to them, you know, let's not worry too much about that. Let's get comfortable with this process and the user interface part of it. We are going to be able to solve that now. We've got workspaces coming out of the box at product line, which is also going to drive that adoption. You know, when it comes to configuring things, I think we'll be driven by the needs of the customer. But the stuff I'm seeing gives me confidence that this is the right thing. And I don't believe it is just another UI. I know in the past we've tried multiple UIs. I mentioned Calgary, right? Calgary changed in Fuji, then Service Portal came out in Helsinki, and we're on UI 16 now. Was that Geneva or something when they brought in real-time presence and all of these things? We've tried and we've learned along the way. I feel like, and having had my hands on RTP version of San Diego, it's at the right point now where this is something that is going to be the UI of UIs, and it's going to be able to evolve without being a new UI. It's going to evolve within itself. That's how I feel. That's what my heart is saying to me. But then I've also got some other things in my head saying,
but what if?
Yeah, you know, like how far should I go with this? But I'm really loving learning about it, and I think it's a massive step change, and for the good of the entire platform.
I hope it's as flexible as they want it to be, because when you first get bitten by the ServiceNow bug and everybody's like, oh, it can do anything, right? It could do anything. And all the business apps can go on ServiceNow. But then there was a point in my life where I started walking into like mature apps in other spaces, and I realized that like there's just some things that you can't do in ServiceNow the way we have it today without essentially rebuilding years of somebody else's app. Do you know what I mean? And it's because we're kind of trapped in this work is about forms, lists, and dashboards. But some people work off of maps, zoomable maps. Some people work off of like, gosh, if you ever look at some of the apps big Agra uses, they've got, yeah, it's a list, but they've got, you know, little flashing lights in the cells to tell you, oh, hey, this tractor has 50% less tire air capacity or something like that. Their interfaces are so tuned to the experience. That's what keeps those apps on those apps and not on ServiceNow.
Yeah, I think that one of the key points to note with UI Builder is, for me at least, what I realized with it is that it's really separating the presentation layer. So all the stuff that we know and love about ServiceNow and where its real power is, where we talk about its data model and its workflows, right? Whether it be a business rule, an actual workflow or flow designer, however we want to make those elements of the work flow through that organization, that none of that changes. UI Builder just puts the layer on top of it. So we're not changing anything other than the way we consume that information. So if I click and change a record, that will still trigger the same flow. So if you're talking about an organization there that's built, you know, what sounds like a heavily customized UI page and made it look beautiful, that's great. You could do the same thing now. You could rebuild that in UI Builder. Rather than just writing hard-coded scripts or you know, embedding UI macros into your UI page, those would become a now component. And then you've just got to hook up the data. But otherwise, it's much of a muchness. There's no difference between a UI page and a now UI page.
There's no difference?
I'm saying there's no difference in principle, right?
Oh,
they're both just presentation layers of the data, and they just allow you that interaction and those event hooks to come in. You know, if I click a button, it does X. There's no difference there. It's just the technology's changed. It's the language that we use. And I'm not a fan of Jelly.
There used to be a joke that it was like, there's 20 people in the world that know Jelly and 15 of them work for ServiceNow.
I'd like to know who those people are.
I mean, it was years ago. It was back, I mean, 1912.
It's probably next now then.
1912, yeah. All right, let's talk about the second one. Let's talk about Instant Scan. as soon as I saw that, I'm like, oh, this is another like pivot point for the platform. Because I always wrestled with, when I was doing being the architect for customers, like I always wrestled with this idea that the vendor should plug and play into my paradigm. But instead, the ecosystem had been so sorely missing like enough talent that a customer wouldn't know what to do. And so they would just trust whatever any vendor came in and said, and then that vendor would set the standard forever after, you know what I mean? And so with Instant Scan, I feel like there's a opportunity for customers to reclaim control over their own standards.
It's so extensible there, and you can use it for different purposes. You can scan at different levels. You can scan the entire instance. You can scan an app. You can scan an update set. You can scan a file, and any combination of those things in reality. So the checks that you want to scan with, you know, you can bundle into suites, and you can execute a suite scan on an app, on an update set, or on the whole instance. So that flexibility and the ability to create and define your own checks, or even take some from elsewhere, you know, like right, they're right. On the ServiceNow Dev program, have got a GitHub, which was part of the 2021 Hacktoberfest. There's some default checks in there. So you can pull that down and actually bundle them up as an app. And we've done a similar thing. We've got our own kind of project standard level checks all living in an app that we can deploy to a customer instance as part of a project, and make sure that we are aligned on standards and highlighting any findings. We can use Instant Scan before we start the project, or at the end of the project, or at every stage throughout it. We can enable the customer to drive their priorities and other features on the backlog, you know, like hygiene stories that maybe come from. So, well, you know,
I mean, one of the jokes Corey and I have is like, we're always trying to find the customer whose system log grows the fastest. So we're always trading stories. Like I had one that it would grow by 500,000 or grow by 1,000,000 a day. So it'd be like by lunchtime, it would be 500,000 records. And then he got to a customer site that would like a quarter million log entries an hour. And so that put us on the bugaboo of don't put open log statements in your scripts, right?
Yep.
Before you move them to prod, make sure that they're commented out. And that to me is just like, that's one more thing you could just have ready inside your Instant Scan, so that if you got a vendor partner or something, they go to close that update set, you just say, hold on a second, let me scan through there. Yep, you got 5 open log statements. Like, go back and close them before we go to change control. And it's just, you could schedule it, you could do it transactionally. I am just so excited about what this thing can do.
Yeah, and you know as well, the point around logs, it's a different topic here. We digress a little bit more, but you don't even need to put all those logs in your scripts anymore. We've got Script Debugger. Right. It's got log points in there.
So, log points.
You know, awesome. Let's stop putting logs in the first place, but let's use Instant Scan to make sure that we catch them just in case. Because I know there might always be a point where we do need to. But there shouldn't be as many of them, right? And they shouldn't slip through to production. So Instant Scan is going to kind of protect that going forward and even highlight those which exist in the past. So Instant Scan, I think, is one of the game changers. And I've got to shout out Mark Rufoff for all of his work on that. I mean,
that guy is a machine. And actually, we'll have a link to his episode in the description below. He's a Titan as well. One thing that we will keep season to season is the war stories, right? Everybody loves to hear about a time where, you know, you felt like your back was against the wall. Nobody was there to help you. It was do or die. What was the hardest point in your ServiceNow career so far?
Yeah, when I thought about this question a little bit beforehand, maybe I'm going to answer this in a different way to others, because it's less of a technical side of it. And what I was thinking about here was actually, you know, the hardest time in my career since getting started with ServiceNow, I think was really about my career and knowing when it's time to move on, and knowing when those opportunities that are in front of you maybe aren't going to stay there. They're going to start to peter out, and what conversations that you should be having with your manager, with your team, about where you want to go and what your ambitions are. And I found that was one of the toughest things, because that's what moved me into the ServiceNow space and moved me into the consultancy space. It was around those conversations and about understanding that, you know, I found this sweet spot for me where I know that ServiceNow is the place, you know, where I can build a career, and that GRC within ServiceNow is an even sweeter spot for me. But that's the kind of work I want to do. And I know there's loads of work there. So being able to have those conversations and make the right decision for me, I think was the hardest time, because I did have a hard time getting to the point where I realized my own value in ServiceNow. And I don't know if that's answering your question, Rob, or if I should think about some actual war stories, but that was kind of the thing that sprung to mind for me.
No, it's whatever you feel in your heart, right? Like, where did you feel the most struggle? On the opposite side of that, what do you feel is like your main accomplishment?
I think getting to this point, I mean, in the GRC world, it's such a hot topic now that it feels like I got in at the right time. It couldn't have happened at a better time for me to have moved into that world with a level of experience, you know, and being one of those people that was around from the beginning of when scoped apps were first there. So my first project in GRC was moving off of the legacy GRC into scoped apps. Okay, so being around and seeing GRC as an application evolve to this point, there's a couple of things that I was involved in. I can't take full credit at all for, but seeing how we were able to take the indicators in GRC, they were running for something like, in one customer, running for like 4 days at a time, like nonstop. You could just go into the logs and watch the SQL queries going up into the millions. It was doing some real heavy lifting. And I'll shout out Courtney, because really he masterminded this, but he took that. I mean, we looked at it together. We talked about it. We tried things like moving to Glide Aggregate, like moving certain things. But what we ended up doing was re-engineering the entire indicator API to execute in a certain way and do all the analysis at the JavaScript level. And you would have thought that after a few million rows stored in a JavaScript object, that maybe JavaScript might fall over and run out of memory, but it didn't. It just held tight. And we squashed it from like 4 days to something like 4 hours. Still a long time to run, but the results at the end were the same, but the way it achieved that result. And for me, that was a massive learning curve to watch somebody like Courtney, he's got war stories. I mean, he can tell you some stuff, but for him to be able to look at it and go, here's an angle, and being able to learn that there's always another angle in the platform. I love to speak to some people that have been around like 10 years plus and ask them, how would you solve this? There's always something in the platform that is still going to help somebody at some point that no one knows about.
All right, you have a hard stop coming up, so I'm going to offer you the final word. Do you have any advice for up-and-comers or anything that you wish somebody knew about ServiceNow?
You know, this is maybe the one question I didn't prepare for. I went through all your bullet points. You know, what's the one thing? For me, I think just knowing how to, like, learning how to learn. Mark said it best on the live coding happy hour stuff, like, know your resources. That's something that I think really rung out for me. I was like, yeah, that's important, but knowing where to go for things. But it's not just that. Like, when you're on your own on the platform, it's just you and the platform, and those people aren't around, or maybe you've exploited every resource you can and you still can't find the answer. Knowing how to learn, knowing how to dig into ServiceNow. When I started learning GRC, there was nobody to learn it from, really. There was no training. There was no certifications. You just had to learn it. So I was tasked with migrating from legacy to scoped apps. The first thing I did was go in and look at the data model, and I drew out the data model. And then I went through and drew out all the columns. And then I went through and looked at all the logic that was running on all of those tables and said, well, hold on, if I create a record here, that triggers a business rule that creates a record over there. And then I would refer back to the docs and find the narrative, find the way that ServiceNow talks about this stuff and be able to have that conversation. But I knew kind of intimately how it was being done as well from exploring there and from looking into it. And that data model, I used to maintain that every release, next release came out, I would go through and go, there's a new column. And you've got a lovely diagram Rob, about these kind of edge cases and the future stuff, the kind of things we're going to try. And there's loads of that in GRC. You know, you can look at GRC's features and look at its architecture, but the way that's built, even if you didn't care about compliance or risk, you can learn so much from the way GRC is implemented. Some of that architectural design, I mentioned indicators, some of those problems have been solved now in the baseline, but you can still go into it and realize how powerful ServiceNow could be for your application, for your use case. You can take stuff from GRC and apply it, you know, whether it be table extensions, script include extensions, dig in, have a look, click around, explore it. Don't rely on somebody else telling you how it is. Check for yourself. And that's really my learning, I think.
Buddy, I am going to make a separate video of just this part, like just this question and answer, because like this is not it's not like every once in a while somebody, it's like every single day I get at least one LinkedIn message, sometimes two or more, like tell me the steps, tell me the exact like 1.1, 1.2, 1.3, 2.1, tell me all the sub steps on how to learn whatever, fill in the blank on ServiceNow. And it's like, A, I don't think it works that way half the time, right? Like how do you approach learning development stepwise? There isn't. You can go all sideways and up and down, and some things you get faster and slower. So it's not so much learn the steps, it's learn how to break it open and examine the component pieces. Learn what questions to ask, not what steps to take, right?
Yeah.
And it was so profound what you said about like, okay, well, let's start with the data structure. And then, you know, now once I know how the tables interact, let's look at the columns. And then once I look at the columns, let's start deconstructing the business logic. And then let's compare it version to version. And I swear to God, if you just did that on whatever you're learning in ServiceNow, two versions, you'll be ahead of everybody. You'll be ahead of everybody.
Yeah, then you've got to try and marry up then the what it's doing with the why it's doing it.
For so sure, why, yeah, with the docs, you know, yeah. Or the sales material that they got on Now Learning half the time. Like,
It's all there for the taking. Mm-hmm. If there was one line that you needed to know in ServiceNow, it's tablename.config. And I do it uppercase because I like it in a new tab. But .config, for that table, it's going to open up all of the configuration records related to that table, and that is going to drive like 90% of the information that you need to know how that thing works. When I click here, why does that happen? You know, it's there for the taking. And then you've got the Discode app that I've been kind of working with. It's on share, but that answers some of the questions for you as well, right? That will scan your app and bring you a visualization of it, that business rule calls that script include. And that's why I built it, is because I want to know how apps are built. I want to know how they interact.
All right, you have a hard stop, so I'm going to stop you from talking. Folks, I got counting like 8 different things that I got to put into the links of this episode. So please check the description below. There's going to be a ton of useful links for you to exploit and up your game. Phil, thanks so much for coming on the show. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me. All right. Take care.
You too. Bye-bye. Hey, everyone. Welcome to another... That's another thing. I do miracles in post-production, so don't be afraid to just pause and repeat yourself.
No worries.
Do you want your message in front of the best ServiceNow admins, developers, architects, and product owners in the business? Want a conversation about your ServiceNow strategy and architecture? You can reach me via my website at www.theduke.digital. If you want to contribute to high-frequency, high-quality ServiceNow content, all you need to do is...
feed the algorithm.
With likes, shares, and comments. Thanks for watching.